Hey guys, how are you? It's Francis, the Market Sniper. Very glad to have an esteemed guest, Joshua Saul from the Pure Gold Company. Now, for some of you asking, if you haven't heard of Pure Gold, it is actually the one physical gold provider that we have in our YouTube notes below, mainly because it's a provider that I've been happy to use and have taken receipt of those amazing silver bars that are beautifully packed that you've seen, those 1 kilos, and various other coins, harmonicas, and everything, a good suite, as well as gold. And they also have even provided me with some platinum. So Joshua has appeared on Bloomberg regularly. So he's a respected name. He's also been on BBC Radio. And there's a third one in there. Joshua, help my sub brain.
CNBC.
CNBC Finance. Thank you very much. Joshua, welcome for coming back on. And nice to meet you and to do this for the first time.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent. So first of all, let's talk about market fundamentals. And I think where you're going to be super useful, because we don't always get this ability. We've had a supply chain crisis, we've had bottlenecks in a variety of things. You are actually handling, you're having your staff working remotely given the events of March 2020, and that's still spilling out and over. We've had a bit of a war push on the metals. There's a lot going on. What, as a someone who's in the business, what have you noticed about gold and silver that's particularly pertinent? Ref, supply, and all of this. Should people be taking it for granted that they can just pick up the phone, jump on the internet, and get exactly what they want within days?
Well, I think they shouldn't take it for granted, because we've, in terms of demand, we've seen over the last 12 months alone a 300% increase in gold demand from retail purchasers, and that's enormous. That's that, you know, if we're using those figures and we're comparing them to the average based on when the pandemic was occurring. So I think, you know, we work with a really wide range, diverse mix of clients, from investment bankers to accountants to lawyers to everyday people, you know, engineers, you know, bricklayers, laborers, you know, pilots, for example. And the beauty of what we do, and I guess the enjoyment of our everyday job, is that we get to speak to people. We get to really understand the reasons as to why they are purchasing. That then kind of interests the media in terms of that qualitative data, in terms of motivations. Some of it's emotional, some of it's analytical, some of it is evidential, but all of it links together. And I think, you know, the big elephant in the room at the moment is that, you know, gold tends to increase when there's uncertainty, political, fiscal, monetary uncertainty. And over the last 24 to 48 hours, we've had a heightened increase in geopolitical uncertainty, Russia and Ukraine. And, you know, whether or not that stays or that disappears, it provides uncertainty within the market. You know, some people understand it for what it's worth and other people don't. We don't know if China are going to get involved, and we don't know if the West are going to back up Ukraine, and we don't know where that's going to end. And, you know, not knowing where that's going to end creates the uncertainty that is ripe for gold price, but more so ripe for gold demand. Yeah. So, you know, it's a strange one, Francis, because it's almost been like a domino of cause and effect. You know, we started off with the Brexit show, and right before that had a chance to finish, we had the COVID show. And right before that had a chance to finish, we had Russia invading Ukraine. So, you know, there's been sequential events that have created, I guess, fear and volatility within the market.
Oh, it seems like there's a permanent conveyor belt of new fear items ready to come off, as you say, before the other one is properly done playing out. It's almost like bombs have been the cure for COVID, hasn't they? In that it's literally come in and the one thing slipped onto the back burner completely, and now this is the new fear product or from the fear product line. But what's really interesting in what you said there and what you did highlight, and possibly I'll draw a little cokey line underneath, is that interestingly enough, stocks fell the S&P fell. In fact, we'll go to the charts in a minute, but it looks like we have a head and shoulder, for which we're just having a return move to the neckline on the Standards and Poor's index, which is not even the hype of the growth tech area. NASDAQ has been even a harder faller. But in that environment, the one thing that was moving, and in fact, on the shorter term, I got that wrong. I thought we were going to have a deflationary effect. I felt that maybe we'll dip one more time. But gold actually came out strong. It was stronger than silver, certainly, as the main one, which points to it being the big money. Do you have an opinion on gold is almost the god market, we call it. It goes first. But do you have an opinion on why gold went so much relatively? Because we actually saw the gold-silver ratio, I appreciate. Hedge funds and big central banks mean is the big buyers was my first thought that came with that. Do you have anything to add on that point?
I think it depends on the motivations. You know, when you're looking at a textbook crisis like war or terror, you know, every single event that we've seen over the last 150 years has resulted in both the gold and the silver price increase.
Yes.
It starts with gold because gold is denominated in US dollars, the US dollar weakens and the gold price increases as a result of that. And then what we then see is silver dragged up as a result of that. It depends on the motivation. I think over the last 24 to 48 hours, people, central banks, institutions, and family offices have used the go-to currency in times of crisis.
It felt like a fear trade, though. Did you feel it was of the fear because of the event? It didn't feel like we've yet got anywhere close to the grassroots bull, where silver starts to follow and then overperform and you have the entire complex go up. It felt more like the fear and the central banks reaching for gold. I don't know if you agree with that or whether you have anything else you would say.
I would say it felt like a holding pattern. It felt like in the absence of not knowing what to do, gold seemed like a good choice. And that's what we see with a lot of our clients as well. You know, some of our clients, property developers, they've just sold a business, you know, they don't want to keep money in the bank because interest rates are so low, inflation's high. You know, they don't want to put it into the equity market because, you know, it's right now sitting at a 12, 13 year high. We're looking at the longest bull run we've seen ever. So, you know, maybe they wish to put it into gold, maybe they don't. But whilst they're deciding what they want to do with their money or their wealth, they see gold as a good holding pattern. That's one of the trends that we've started to see. That's one of the trends that we started to see quite recently, because gold has always been more of a long-term store of wealth. You know, we've seen clients purchase both gold and silver for 5 to 10 year minimums. Because of globalization and the speed at which everything moves and changes, the definition of long-term is changing. And what we would have called long-term, you know, a few years ago, you know, is very, very different to today. And I think the downside of storing wealth in gold short-term is that, look, you might get caught out between the buying price and the selling price. And of course, there's volatility in every market. You know, you can't avoid that. The longer you hold on to gold, the more likely you are to remove that risk. But I think, you know, risk is relative. And I think, you know, if you're looking at the broad horizon of alternatives, gold seems to be a less riskier place to be, even if it's for short term.
Yes, hence why the popular name, it's almost the near cash that doesn't go down with inflation. Not a stock that pays a yield, but it's a bet again. It's an insurance against system failure, and I would argue that system failure has never been more close and more imminent than we've had in this entire cycle since the Bretton Woods event. We were also brought up the S&P. So I thought I would just, let me just make sure I've got the right thing in front of me, bring up the performance, because for many people, they see these things as relative asset alternatives. And I know this was something you'd wanted to make a comment on. This is the Standard & Poor's index. So this isn't even the NASDAQ. This is just our friend, the S&P, the traditional equities, and how it's done from, let's go from the 90s, you're essentially at 43. This is the ETF, I just brought up the ETF, 43 to 430, basically a 10x since 94, 95 to today, which is an unbelievable performance. And we've got to also bear in mind, there was in fact an entire lost decade from 2000 until you made it through that level again. In fact, it's slightly more than a decade. You were at 2013 before you made the highs of the 2000 again. So in essence, you've had an unbelievable and we would almost say overvaluation period from your 94 into 2000 and your 2012 into the current position of around about 430. So that's 10 years, 2012, 2022, 94 to 2000, essentially 6 years, a lost decade. And then from the lost decade, another decade of just unbelievable returns. Inside of which, so many people talk about the crash of the pandemic, inside of which you still had a huge sell-off of around 40%, 30% at least. I haven't got the exact levels there. You're around 340. So you managed some pretty big volatility on the March 2020 events. But this points eventually to in a system failure, to a bit of a hypervaluation in equities. I know you are particularly interested in the PE ratios, which are at super stretchy levels, the future earnings, which are required to be incredible performance to justify forward earnings. And on, as technicians, something that we'll pull into the equation, if I just drop down into the lower timeframes, we might have had, whether that turns out to remain the case or not, we might have had a little bit of a head and shoulder structure that came into play here. And are just getting a little bit of a return move for the reversal. Now, people can go to death shorting, the head and shoulder shorting on the indices, but eventually some of these do indeed happen. What's your take on equity valuation versus the gold price, for example, or silver, either of the precious metals?
It's a good question. You know, historically, you know, gold has an inverse relationship to the stock market falling in value. So when you see increased fear, increased uncertainty, you would expect the stock market to decrease in value, you'd expect the gold price to increase. Now, over the last 5 to 10 years, what we've seen is quite extraordinary in that we've seen the gold price increase off the back of fear, but we've also seen the equity market continue to increase. And the equity market increasing, one has to question, is this because of the fundamentals of the companies involved, or is this because of the amount of printing the government has pushed into the money supply? And that brings me on to you know, a really interesting topic, because you know, we saw that Goldman Sachs, you know, missed their earnings at the beginning of the year and their share price took an absolute nosedive. And I believe that they are, you know, they're tip of the iceberg in terms of other banks. You know, a lot of our clients are very, very worried about counterparty risk, especially a lot of the European banks, a lot of the US banks. But price to earnings is an interesting one, because, you know, in a normal climate, what we would expect to see is a positive correlation between stock prices and earnings. And if you think about it, you know, if the 500 companies that make up the S&P 500, if they're all collectively becoming more and more profitable, well, we should expect their share price to go up, the S&P 500 to go up. And if these 500 companies are becoming less profitable, well, we would expect the share price to decrease and the S&P 500 to go down. And what we've noticed is that over the last bull run, and since 2008, the Dow Jones bottomed at, I think it's around 7,000 points. And today it's just over 33,000. So we've seen a stock market that's almost quadrupled in value. And here's the big concern. Company earnings within the same period have increased relatively very marginally. And that, you know, there are examples all over the Dow Jones and also the S&P 500, where company profits have actually dropped significantly in the same period, whilst their share price has increased significantly. And that's, I think,
fascinating. I'll jump in there because I'm going to bring up the Dow. It's not entirely dissimilar to the S&P, but one of my favorite examples on exactly what you're saying, and we speak about that in the YouTube channel, was Coca-Cola. And I can I'm going to be totally off on my numbers, so I'm just going to, this is more anecdotal than 100% accurate, but I remember debt on Coca-Cola over the last decade and a half, I think, went up about 5 times. Earnings actually are down about 5 or 15%, and the share price over that same 15-year period is 3 times higher. So you have a more indebted concern. You have a concern that is giving you less in terms of earnings, and you are paying, I think, a 3x for the price. That is all. Just to make the point, I doubt it's accurately recalled from a time frame. But I remember flabbergasted by that, because this Simon Black, who writes lots of interesting circulars, and he was highlighting that particular element. You know, the price is higher. Surely you must be getting a better item, only to find out you're getting an item that is worth four times more debt, making lower earnings, and now just costs a ridiculous amount. And that's just hot money, isn't it? Hot fiat money that's having to find a place to live and is overbidding. And when do we get that blow off shooting star, I suppose, event where other assets start to become more attractive? Well, reset is it. And you're totally spot on with that. So sorry, I was just coming in to second you on a specific example on the Dow. And let's go back, and you were talking about what was the period you were referring to, Josh?
Well, that it was a point well made, but what I was saying was that, you know, the fact that we've seen, you know, profits drop despite the fact that their PEs have increased is the definition of a bubble. And I think one has to ask the question, you know, why is this? And effectively it boils down to fiscal policy. You know, we've got an environment with really low interest rates. They're pumping money through the markets. And of course, what we've seen and what we hear about from a lot of our smart money clients is the notion of something called corporate buybacks. And it's simple. You know, we see interest rates at record lows. Companies have been borrowing a huge amount of money. And essentially what they do is they take that money, they buy their own stock. And truly, it's a definition of manipulation. Because the money's so cheap, they pump it through their stock. They see this huge growth in stock value, but it's not real. It's not real growth. And this is not rising corporate earnings. It's simple fiscal manipulation.
There's a phrase called control fraud, and they talk about it as the agency problem when professional management is remunerated on the stock price. And I think we're in the most extreme version of a control fraud across the board of executive, because remuneration committees have CEOs of all the various different corporations cross-pollinating. It's almost like the FDA in the pharma industry. And what you get is this rotating turnstile where I'm on your remuneration committee and you're on mine. And we all say, well, you've done an amazing job if you were to get the share price here, in which case I will give you almost $1 billion in share options over the course of 4 years if you achieve this. This is some mega corp, similar to, say, Coca-Cola or other. You borrow up to the hilt, you leverage. If you're an automaker, you force your dealers to buy loads of stock, so they sit heavy with stock. You claim the sales, you stuff the pipe. Leverage to the hilt, you buy backs on an unprecedented scale, and you drive your stock price. You collect your $1 billion over 5 years at $150 million a year or 10 years, and you're the greatest CEO that's ever lived. Your supply chain is absolutely green. They're so ready to puke with product. Then you start running discounts, you destroy the brand. That's short-termism, quarteritis, and control fraud over long-term sensible valuations, and essentially the management have hijacked the corporation for their own interests, and shareholder is not really entirely king, but for short term he does enjoy the ride with them. And if you have sufficient of this, which we've now had an entire almost an era, the boomer era, we sit with unsound money because we've got artificially low. I heard the stats that there's 15% of Dow's American stock companies in this top 500 that actually have to borrow to make dividend payments. 15% actually continue to add debt to make and meet and sustain dividend payments, which is absolutely ludicrous. Plus, we're in this debt swinging environment. What a quick chart on this one, because we've spoken a little bit about equity markets and the control fraud, and how if this it used to be sort of like an Enron thing, now it's endemic and it's entirely globalized. So the whole system is now corrupted with a macro control fraud, which then undermines the value of money. It makes the rates can't go up because half the stock market will be obliterated. We have Jay Powell that's standing behind the high yield debt market to hold up pensions because there's a shelf of near junk corporate debt, thanks to all of these buybacks that are sitting, that's such a huge shelf that are just one rating above, that if they got downrated, all the pension investors would have to divest of them, leading to an absolute cliff, an overhang of selling that would devastate the market. So these guys are holding the stock market up. They're holding the valuation of bonds and debt up on a Ponzi scheme that literally has come to the near end. And here we're sitting with the CEO of a real money, physically owned and held, pure gold, hold it in your hand and you have it. Can't be taken off you no matter what law they pass. They have to send a man with a gun to find you. Far safer than anything we get. And I'm asking myself, why are not more guys clicking the link below? I mean, you've actually done really well, and I'm very glad we have had a lot of introductions. Thank you to everyone who does. But actually, you should need a call center to take the number of calls in this environment. And why is it that folks don't see it? It's almost the parallel. It's like perception becomes reality. The parallel universe of truth and sound money is now the dream, and the perversion is now the reality. It's almost like a mental psyop of such state that people can't actually put a handle out the window and grab something that's real. How much do you see that most of the world just isn't getting it as well as you are doing? Why do so many people not be gold and silver investors?
Well, it's an interesting question. And what I would say is the trend certainly starts with the smart money. We start to see a trend of bankers, investment bankers, accountants, lawyers, lots of people that work within government. When you start to see a strong correlation of those sorts of stakeholders purchasing all at the same time and in earnest, then you start to wonder what is going on, irrespective of what you know to be the case. And then what happens is you then start to get, you know, the rest of the market that follows suit based on what's happening to the price. And I think it's interesting because psychologically, people purchase gold that have never done so based purely on the fact they've just read in the headlines that the gold price has increased by 7%.
This is the momentum chasers.
It is. And, you know, it's understandable. You know, people have that fear of missing out. But if you look at the central banks become net buyers when the gold price decreases in value. And we've seen that over the course of the last 12 months. Whenever we see a strong dip in the gold price, we see the central banks buy in earnest. We see the smart money, the institutions and the family offices. When we hear of these sorts of stakeholders telling us that price to earnings right now is the highest it has ever been in US history, bar one event. And I think that one of them was during the dot-com bust. Price to earnings right now sits at around 33. And back in 2000, it was just below that. And then we were followed by a 75% fall in the NASDAQ and a 50% fall in the Dow. So when you start to hear, you know,
were they as indebted as they are now?
Sorry.
And in neither of those indices were the corporations in those two indices as indebted as they are today.
I agree, but and that's a very good point, because I think there was something very unique about the dot-com bubble burst from a price to earning standpoint. And you know, if you remember from the year 2000, tech stocks were very new to us. You know, Facebook wasn't even in existence. So these companies had, you know, they had large captive audiences. They hadn't effectively monetized them yet. So the points the analysts were giving these crazy, crazy valuations above and beyond their earnings because they understood future potential, but the money wasn't there. So the valuations were based on debt. They were based on injections of cash. The point being is that they couldn't really value them. And now we've got the likes of Amazon, eBay, you know, all the other fintech companies, exactly the same thing is happening as we speak. And, you know, if you look at a PE ratio chart over the last 100 years, and you were to take a pen and draw a straight line across US history, you're going to see something very clear. And it's this: without one historical exception, whenever the price to earnings ratio is hit 27 or above, it's been followed by over a 50% crash in the stock market. And there are literally no exceptions in history. So the fact that, you know, we have avoided over the last 13 years a crash tells me that we are on borrowed time.
Yeah.
And whether or not it's banks going into insolvency, because I don't know about you, Francis, but in the UK, you're hard pressed to find a local bank branch. Yeah. They are closing at the speed of knots, and they are doing everything they possibly can.
Selling the property as well to developers and getting whatever they can back in on the basis that physical banking is certainly disappearing. And to further addend your point, I would say it's a technical analysis truism that the longer the cycle and the longer the boom, because you were mentioning borrow time and how this has been such an extension, and the central bankers have actually got involved this time. They've become player managers on the football team instead of just being officials, referees. What the bigger the boom and the bigger the cycle, the far larger the bust. So without doubt, we're going into something that will transcend previous recessions. I consider the 2008 was an actual depression. No one ever talks about depressions until they're long in arrears. But it met all the criteria of a definition of a depression, and what comes next has to be the ultimate expression of that and an entire redraw up. So they are manufacturing that, and it's not, I don't feel it's I've got a feeling on gold that we'll never see in the paper market the full actualization of where it's going to end up going. I feel that there will be as part of that melt up process, or as it starts to go and everyone gives up on all other assets. And it was very interesting early on in the chat, you were talking about the Pavlovian response of everyone to reach for the 4,000 year old solution. That is, hey, it's high value, it's rare, I'll have that. It wasn't Bitcoin. They all reached for that. And now we're in this super cycle. I almost have this feeling they can't let the paper market ever trade to its true value. We'll have a collapse first. It's quite a moderate value. It may happen at 2,500 in a 3 weeks time. It could be 3 months. It could, maybe it'll even limp on for 3 years. It's difficult to see, but we've all thought it would end and it's not. But the point being is, post the lightning strike and the Bretton Woods Mark II and the WTO and everybody being pulled together and the chaos on the streets, the revaluation for the new era is they'll set a whole new level. It'll be the opportunity. It'll be the $35 setting mark from the $20 mark that occurred after the confiscation in the States. Only instead of going from $20 to $35, that is utter Mickey Mouse-dom. They literally, and this is one of the scenarios forward looking when I'm thinking, and this is proper spitballing on my behalf, so it's not a fact. We're talking about the future, it's probability and possibilities, but I just see a reval. You know, it could just come in at 50 grand at whatever dollar was, if it's still in existence in a form, a digital central bank dollar, which would maybe be start out equivalent to the dollar as it gets closed, the everyday fiat, and you could just end up straight at 50,000, and you could have a couple of thousand on silver, and that's where you get your uptick. You have to just have a virtue of a monk during these paper market era, and not miss the macro trade. Just keep buying truth, because it seems like gold is one of the few things that represents a hard, fixed, tangible, whole truth that will transcend this digital financial surveillance era that is also coming. What's your take on that? Would you supplement that in any way? Would you add to it?
I think to put things into perspective, you know, you've got around 450 trillion of financial assets out there, and only 7 trillion of this is in sound money like gold or Bitcoin. 5 trillion is in tradable gold. 1 trillion sits in gold stocks, and 1 trillion sits in Bitcoin. So even if only 10% of that goes into gold, you would see a 5 to 6 times jump in the gold price. You've got commentators saying that you would see gold hitting $10,000 an ounce. Now, whether or not that happens or not, I can't comment, because I think we've all been wrong with predictions, and it's impossible to predict. I based predictions purely based on how bad the economy is in terms of fear and volatility. And I use that as the barometer in terms of where we could expect gold to go. But in terms of talking about, you know, the paper market, I think you're right. You know, it's impossible for the paper market to be fully physically backed with the underlying metal that most of our clients are wanting to get their hands on. And I think there are positives of moving into the physical market in that, you know, it might appear cheaper in the first instance, but you know, in the paper market, you're having to pay things like ongoing charges to platforms, and you don't actually get anything physical. And you know, if you're one of those people that worry about, you know, the consequence of the Woodford saga, where people were trying to sell because it seemed like a good time to sell, but they weren't able to redeem any of their assets because there was a clause that says they couldn't sell, you know, that's a big concern for people that are buying into funds when they know that it can't completely be physically backed with that metal.
Yeah.
I think if you have a short-term view on gold, if you're buying today and selling next week because of a war you expect to happen in the next 3 or 4 days, then you're reducing that risk. But if you're buying as a long-term store of wealth, most of our clients appreciate the need for something that is physical, something that is tangible, something that of course tends to increase in times of uncertainty. But I think the key difference here is that when you're purchasing physical, you are removing a portion of your wealth from the banking, from the financial system. And you're, yes, doing it in a way whereby it is private, it's autonomous, you've got various tax advantages, and the liquidity that you have is as strong as any of the cash that you've got sitting in a bank account, but you're not having to worry about counterparty risk because effectively you're in control, you're in the driving seat. And I think, you know, in a world where we feel like we are losing control over, you know, all of the things we see in the news, where we can go, what we can do, what we're allowed to eat, people want more and more of that control. You know, especially when it comes to their wealth.
On that very point, I was reading some interesting research just on the more other recent events that was ongoing. You will recall the truckers in Ottawa and the Canadian Trudeau government that froze bank accounts, which once again undermined people's confidence in their freedom and access to their money. He spoke of making the Emergency Care Act permanent. And then, in other words, they were not going to remove their special privileges and rights. He was getting the dictator's thrill, as I like to call it. And then suddenly there was an absolute rush on banks. And the people were taking their money out of the banks. They were sending it to the USA. They were buying dollars. They were dumping Canadian dollars. They were closing accounts. They were emptying accounts. And it is believed that it was actually the commercial banking side that made representations to him that he was creating a panic run in the banking environment that never came out in media, but that they had a a rethink about that, and they have now dropped the Emergency Care Act. What a difference it makes if you actually already hold your wealth in a well-established asset that everybody's happy to have, and it's you know, it's under, it's in the back garden where you did your late night gardening, instead of potentially trapped in a system under the guise of a World Economic Forum young leaders type guy, such as Trudeau.
It's interesting because, you know, the same thing happened in Cyprus and Greece, if you remember, where not only did they prevent people from spending their own money, but they had an allowance based on how much you could take out of ATMs, how much you could transfer out the country. And I remember back then, and we had a lot of business from Greek and Cypriot clients that wanted to get their wealth out of the country, but they weren't allowed to access their cash.
Yeah.
And, you know, from
of course, speaking the to, that you should say, above a certain amount of wealth, they took 50% thereof. So, and I think the amount was around 100,000 euro, but they literally haircutted anybody who had a six-figure above it. So they lost 50%. You got basically given worthless stock in a bankrupt bank that should actually been allowed to fail. And that's the key thing. And again, that's loss. You actually don't have sovereignty over your wealth unless you hold it in your hand, which is the case you and I are both making to people who'll be watching this. Where's your gold?
I remember when that happened, and I remember clients who were UK residents that had money in Cyprus because they were Cypriot nationals, and they'd woken up in the morning to see 50% of their money disappear.
And that's a bail-in legislation, if I can jump in, Josh, sorry, and that bail-in legislation is now universally proliferated across all, I say all, that's a blanket statement, that's not accurate. Most nation states, I can name them, Australia, Canada, US, they've all now recently addended terms and conditions that will allow them the same set of circumstances in the future. So you're talking about the T's and C's of your agreement. You don't own that money in the bank, you're a liability. You're become a creditor. You're like somebody who sold as a product and hasn't been paid. You have to collect your money. And every now and then you can go there and ask for it and you might get some of it, but try ask for all of it in a hurry if it's a six-digit sum. Try ask for cash in a hurry in a six-digit sum and see how they huff and puff and fill in this and have you paid your tax and throw all sorts of forms into the air in your face. Try get your stuff in a hurry. Your money is not as safe as you think it is. In your mind, it's your money. In their mind, you are a creditor amongst many other creditors that they have created on a fractional reserve banking system. And that risk is so vast. And the notion that reset is coming, they've actually set the terms to give you a haircut to suit them. And now you're literally sitting and waiting for that haircut, but you still have time now. Do people still have time? What should they be doing?
Well, desperate people do desperate things. And I think desperate governments do even worse things because they are bound by, I guess, less of a moral compass. And I would say that it's happened in Cyprus and it's happened in Canada, it's happened in Iceland. And I would say that it's possible. Even if we accept that it might not be probable, if we can accept that it's possible, then are we willing to risk the fact that one day we could wake up in the morning for us to turn on the news, for us to hear that actually the government thought it was a really good idea to retrospectively apply a tax bill that would seek to tax anyone that had over £100,000 by 40% effective immediately? Because at that point, you can't do anything.
Yeah.
Suffice to say, you know, you're not covered for anything more than £75,000 or sorry, £85,000 in your bank account. Now, as a business, and we run a successful business in the UK, but we access all areas of the world. So we have lots of different bank accounts so that we diversify our risk. the amount of letters that we get from banks informing us that if the bank were to go under, we wouldn't be covered to any sum over and above 85,000. The banks have a duty of care to inform you to not keep more than that amount in the bank. And the reason for that is that, you know, if anything were to happen, you know, they don't want to be blamed for telling you that it was safe.
Yeah.
The problem being is that the insurance companies that are responsible for ensuring that, you know, those premiums are paid out to clients if, you know, bank accounts go under, it's academic. Because, you know, if we were to see, you know, a swathe of banks, you know, go into insolvency, a big question mark would arise as to whether or not, you know, people would get their £75,000 worth.
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking about what's known as the FDIC in America, the Federal Deposit Insurance,
Federal Insurance Deposit Corporation.
Yeah, that would, and it's absolute, and they take a small amount of money and they supposedly, but this would only, this would simply not have any material contribution in an entire systemic failure. It might
They're now asking banks to prepay insurance premiums for the next 5 years. And because that, you know, clearly there's a cash flow issue there. The problem is that by asking banks to pay more money for an event that may well happen,
it makes them more shaky.
It makes them more shaky and pushes them more onto the margins. So I would say, you know, the biggest factor that scares us, because you've got the analysis and then you've got what's really happening. And sometimes they're the same thing and sometimes they're completely different. And, you know, what gives us that insight into knowing if they're the same is that we get to speak to every single one of our clients. And if we're talking to the heads of various different banks and hedge funds and institutions and family offices, and they are wasting no time in terms of removing exposure to various different banks because of reasons that they cannot professionally disclose to us, then we feel that there is a duty of care to convey some of these trends to other clients who might not be privy to that same sort of information. And if it turns out that we're wrong and a bank doesn't go under, well, look, you've still got your wealth in something that's physical, something that's tangible, and something that can be liquidated as quickly as you're capable of purchasing gold in the first place.
Correct. And the key point you made the first time, and you've alluded to indirectly again, is that this is well-informed insider opinion. Well-informed insider opinion has driven big money, and smart money moves first, always, has driven a 300% climb in volumes for you, and the price has only moved not very greatly. In fact, I still consider silver very much in range for what it's been in the last year and a half. And gold is upper half, not even taken out the $2,000 high again. In fact, we probably should check the gold price to conduct an interview of this nature, and not to have done so would be remiss. Before I do that, let's just show you the one chart that I had put it on, and we'll tie that in, because we've spoken about equity valuation, and everybody understands equity. They understand who Coca-Cola and McDonald's and Apple are. The one thing I find people understand less, but is almost more important, is the debt market. This is the USD 10-year treasury. It's the debt market and it's the yield. And we have upside, and I bring it out all the time, so people are getting more and more used to having it put in front of them. But this is the yields going up. And actually, the yields going up, it's going to, the notion that gold can't go up, well, we've just seen gold going up on an increasing yield. And we have to point out that this increasing yield is horrifically behind the devaluation of money, which on their own numbers is around 7.5%. In truth, is closer to 15, 16%. So to be moving up to a 2% yield is actually a very moderate increase to be facing. Although, given the amount of debt, it's going to be super sensitive to all those hyper-leveraged companies, the junk bonds markets, and all these other plates that are being kept spinning up in the air. And I always also show the monthly chart of this one, Josh, because it illustrates the entire bond cycle of 40 years. And it's just, it's unbelievable. So that is 10-year treasury yield. You can see how the sensitivity when you log scale, it's such a huge capitulation. For me, typically cycles end on either major capitulations or blow off tops. That's technically. So for us, we called the top of the debt market with this yield plunge to 0.39. And in our opinion, the debt markets will go into failure. They're too big to ever return to the previous rates. The debt is too high. It's much higher than it was in the Falker years to ever go back up. But we will probably have a reset or a failure when these yields get not much higher than 3 or 4%. But, you know, your guess is as good as mine. Let's get that gold price up and see how it's performed. As I mentioned, you've got to have the patience of a monk with precious metals. And I would like to warn that the paper price, I still feel there's a deflationary dip in it. And you've got a bit of a shooting star here. We were a bit reluctant to get overly excited, and in fact, we were on the wrong side, as I've mentioned. So every time you make a prediction, you stand the chance of being incorrect. But we thought they might do a deflationary strike one more time before we went up. And what we've seen is this great up move has been very much the Ukraine war narrative. And now that it seems people were buying on the rumor, and now there seems to be a little bit of a sell on the fact, but we did run 1960. And I'd like to emphasize it's for the reasons we were discussing and for what happens post Bretton Woods Mark II, Mark III, whatever you want to call it, that you're buying, not for the short-term paper price. This actually looks like you're going to get a discount window and come back a little bit in the range short-term. But everything we're speaking about fundamentally is will take you through the new system event. So that's the gold price. What's your take? And how was demand and how were you able to fulfill? Because I want to bring pure gold into this. Tell us, how was the demand personally for the company as the CEO of the company, the representative? This is the face that our community will be seeing for the first time, the YouTube. The links are below, by the way, guys. You're meeting the man behind it. He's a stand-up guy. I've been buying from them for a couple of years now. How did you respond? Was there delays in getting product? Give us a little bit of a practical take on the recent events and being in your company and dealing with it.
So we saw close to a 300% increase in people purchasing physical gold over the last 7 days. We saw a notable spike the morning that we woke up to Russia invading Ukraine. You know, lots of first-time investors, people that have never done it before, purchasing off the back of the hype. As an organization that provides a consultative approach, we give guidance in terms of timing. So, you know, we can explain to clients why to do it, when to do it, and how to do it. Lots of our guidance was to wait because we believe there was going to be a discount towards the end of the day. And look, some of our clients will listen and some of our clients would just want to move into that. And that's absolutely fine. What we did find was far more demand when the gold price dipped towards the end of the day. And that's when the smart money clients started to purchase. We saw some of them purchase first thing in the morning. And then when there was a bit of a sell-off, the smart money clients, the institutions, bought back in. And we're seeing that continue today. So you'd expect that yesterday would have been a far busier day than today because the gold price was much higher. No, it works completely converse for us. So we've had a really, really busy day today because the gold price has dipped in value. In terms of availability, it's a really good question because, you know, during lockdown, there were lots of other gold companies and silver companies that weren't able to supply. We had huge, huge supply chain issues. You know, you're seeing supply chain issues in the car industry, in the restaurant industry. Because of Brexit, you can't get goods or people from one border to the next. And, you know, it worked in the same way with physical metals. You know, if you go all the way back to the source, because of the restrictions, you know, miners weren't able to go in and mine, refiners weren't able to go in and refine, you didn't have the logistics companies from getting the gold from A to B, and therefore there was a huge slowdown in being able to get gold from A to B. Now, what we do within our game is quite unique, because we offer our clients a buyback guarantee. And essentially what that means is we provide our clients with a guaranteed means of instant liquidity whenever they require it. It doesn't matter when they wish to sell, why they wish to sell, they've got that peace of mind knowing that they can do so. Now, we've got a lot of clients that take delivery. You know, we're a big believer in if you don't have it, you don't own it. And I think there are some exceptions to that rule, not many. The one exception that we hold high is that if clients don't want to take delivery for practical reasons, I mean, the last thing you want is your kids walking around with your gold bars or your gold coins or what have you, or you might not live in an environment that accommodates, you know, taking deliveries of gold bars or gold coins, then you might wish to store it in a safe place. So storing your gold or silver in a place separate to the place that you bought it from allows you to separate church from state. So yes. we store with London Bullion Market approved vaults. And the benefit during the pandemic, as an example, was that because we give our buyback guarantee, because lots of our clients choose to store in London Bullion Market approved vaults, the clients selling back their gold to us if they decided they needed liquidity was seamless. And that would often put us into a position whereby we had available stock to sell. So as much as we are sellers of gold and silver, we're buyers of gold and silver. Yeah. And, you know, most of our clients, I would say 99% of our clients will sell back to us because of our facility, but also because they're not going to get a better price than from us. So, you know, we've always been in a fortunate position whereby we've always been stocked enough to satisfy demand. There have been occasions where we've cut it fine. You know, let's not forget, gold and silver is a finite resource. It's impossible to have enough to satisfy, you know, some of the worst of conditions, whereby demand may well go through the roof. So we have had situations where, you know, we've almost had a waiting list to purchase gold or silver.
On that point, because, if I can jump in, it's client's duty. It's almost, no matter how well run you are, and you are clearly a very well run bullion dealer, no matter how well any bullion dealer will be, I expect that eventuality to occur. And it will be a client failure for not dealing with you earlier rather than a failure of your business. Because such is the nature and the macro tendency, the fact that you've been able to meet supply is more a good sign of general contingency on your behalf. But the eventual failure, which I see as an eventuality, almost an certainty in my opinion, as ever, we're talking about the future and I could be wrong, will be a failure of the person watching this video right now. Because it's game over. If you want to stampede when everyone else stampedes, I'm afraid you're not going to see anything but the dust, like every other buffalo that's ever stampeded. You've got to be a lead steer. You've got to get in there, and you've got to have secured your tenor and got your position. And I say this, we have a crypto audience as well, Josh, on our Crypto Sniper channel. And of course, we have our traditional market traders, you know, oil, FX, everything that else that goes on that's on this channel that you will be on here. But you shouldn't try have the fastest horse. You need a stable of horses, and the foundational stable horse that will always be there in all weather conditions. Power down, internet down, mobile down, your Bitcoin is not going to be there. Your Satoshis will not be spent on food or whatever. But coins, numismatic coins, traditional coins in tubes, monster boxes and bars are always going to be there, especially under your own jurisdiction and control. So you need that scrum. A great rugby team is built with a you know, a large chunky prop forward and a fast wing. They aren't the same. And just to say, I only want a team of wingers because it's they're the fastest horses. Is not a winning rugby team for all seasons and all actualities. So I'm sure some of the people watching this are hopefully achieving this, because it's a pity how in some circles the crypto realm has been positioned as an alternative instead of a supplementary element. And they've encouraged this animosity. Some of it's through the likes of, say, Peter Schiff, and also on the crypto side, you know, various McCormack and various other guys talking, bragging about how much they're up on any given day or any given time period. Do you have a comment on, do you concur with that view? Do you have anything you want to add in terms of the crypto universe and gold and silver? We've discussed debt, we're discussing how it's deflating and the yields are going up and that it doesn't get to go to Falco levels, we'll fail before then. We've discussed the ridiculous valuations of equity. So many people will talk about the other alternatives and that gold doesn't pay any interest. What's your comment on the crypto, the gold versus crypto arguments?
Well, I don't see it as an argument personally, and I think I agree with you. I see they complement each other. You know, we have lots of clients who, put it this way, we never recommend that clients should put all of anything into one thing. You know, it's about having a balanced portfolio. You know, equities, property, gold, crypto, oil, gas, they're all great asset classes, all have their time in their day. It's about getting the timing correct. And if you feel like, you know, cryptocurrency has, I guess, a little bit less of a track record, it's less established than physical gold, the upside can be huge, as we've seen. The downside can also be huge, which means that, you know, if you want to speculate, and in some cases, it is worth taking that punt if you can afford to lose that amount of money, but hedging yourself in something that has an undeniable track record of growth in times of uncertainty is normally the way that we see our clients position their portfolios. So a little bit of gold, a little bit of crypto, a little bit of equity. And then, you know, a lot of our clients will tweak and tinker as the markets react accordingly.
Yeah.
I don't see it as an argument. I see, you know, at the moment, keeping money in the bank is clearly no option for any prudent custodian of their own wealth. You know, interest rates are so low. And in a way, the cryptocurrency market has created an escape valve. Anyone that are seeking some sort of a real return on their money. You know, inflation's it's the highest it's been in over 40 years. And whether or not we use the measure we're told to use or the measure that we should be using that takes into account rent and property and construction costs, I would say that real inflation is probably closer to 9 or 10%.
Yeah.
And probably more than that. But if we are on the side of being conservative, you know, for the government to give us a real rate of return so that we don't need to seek out other asset classes, they would have to put up interest rates to 9 or 10%. Yeah. And I fear that they're going to have to put up interest rates anyway to control inflation. They're going to have to do that. Yeah. We're damned if we do, and we're damned if we don't. But a lot of our younger demographic within our client base, they've never seen a rate rise within their mortgage in their adult life. And if we go back to pre-crisis levels of around 5%, which is completely, you know, they're completely normal levels. But compared to where we are at the moment, most people would see themselves paying 500% more on their mortgage outgoings per year. You take that into account for inflation, then in a way, it doesn't really matter, you know, if you can earn, you know, 7% in the equity market, and it doesn't matter if you can earn 25%, you know, overnight in Bitcoin. You're going to be losing money because of the level of inflation and the amount of erosion that's taken from your portfolio. Now, I think the important thing to remember with gold is that by, you know, the definition of inflation is the rise in cost of commodities and services. And by its very definition, gold is a commodity, and so is silver. So, you know, within that, you know, it is a natural hedge, and it tends to increase in line with inflation. So I would say that being conservative, which a lot of our clients are, they like to use a hedge that will, in the best of conditions, hedge themselves against, you know, rising costs of inflation, but also the worst of conditions, you know, hedge themselves against black swan events like a pandemic, like a war, and, you know, less of a black swan event, but a predicted correction in the equity markets or a bubble, you know, a debt explosion within the bond market. You know, that's why our clients are doing it. You know, 10% of your portfolio in gold goes a long way in terms of the downside movement you would see in the equity market as a result of a collapse.
Yeah. I want to get a specific question, because we've had quite a few guys from the States purchase through you, but my suspicion, because this YouTube channel is traditional markets and trading, we have a strong North American, that'll be Canada, America, and Australian, as well as that English language. So apart from our UK, European, and down through to South African time zone, there's been guys coming in, but I have that suspicion that a lot of the Americans sitting here, for example, or Canadians, will think, I like this. Yes, that's the reason why I want to buy gold, and then pick up their phone to their local dealer. So as someone who's based in London, and as someone who's received in Cyprus and other parts of the world from you, can anyone watching this engage with you for delivery of precious metals? What are the criteria for using pure gold? Can you deliver? Where can't you, if there's any exclusion zones?
Well, the simple answer to your question, Francis, is absolutely. You know, we're a UK-based company, but we have clients all over the world, you know, within and across Europe and within and across the United States of America. And actually, a lot of clients would rather use us than their own domestic dealers because of our buyback guarantee, and because of the rate at which we sell and buy back, the difference between the buying price and the buyback price.
Do you have any information on that you're prepared to share right now?
Absolutely. If you take a typical 1 ounce gold coin, for example, what you might find is that with online dealers, you know, they might charge you a slightly lower premium, but they won't give you a buyback guarantee. And when you come to sell back to them, they're going to bid you around 4 or 5% below the spot price. And therefore, yeah, you've widened your spread massively. And that's because they have no interest in buying your gold back from you.
They're net proliferators. They're part of the supply chain rather than also vaulting.
Correct. When we sell, you know, we're selling at competitive premiums, but our buyback prices are considerably higher, which means the net difference between the selling price and the buyback price is much narrower than a lot of the online companies. And, you know, I think the other point is worthy of mentioning. We're a consultative-based company. So look, if you're looking to buy a coin for your birthday that comes in a big shiny mahogany box, then there are probably other companies that you can use. Yeah. But if you're looking for guidance in terms of timing, in terms of what to purchase, in terms of pricing, then, you know, that's where we earn our stripes. You know, there's guidance we can give on premium, and there's guidance we can give on timing within the gold market. Just because the gold price is falling doesn't necessarily mean that premiums aren't high. So, you know, we like to be able to combine the fact that the gold price is at a certain level and buying and selling premiums are at a certain level, because you're always going to have an optimum point at which a client wants to purchase that. And because we're not selling our stock, you know, we are market makers, we're hedged, We have no vested interest whether or not a client buys high or buys low, other than our reputation for giving that guidance, as opposed to a shop whereby they might be selling stock. We'd much rather they get it right. We'd much rather turn a client away and say, you're doing everything correctly, come back in 3 days' time, and let's have a conversation about buying at that point in time.
And that's the thing, not to knock the other guys like Peter Schiff or Mike Maloney that are big names, but they always want you to buy. And I've seen technical conditions where I've said, no, guys, you don't want to be buying right now. You'll get the same metal later for less. And you won't have a significant change in premiums as well to compensate for that. In other words, it's always buy, always buy. So let's just recap that. A, it's the key point that came out of your first comment is it's not just what you pay and how much that premium is to spot that needs to be tight. It's the overall deal in pricing that you get, because in most instances, even though you think you will never be a seller, there will be a time to sell some silver and gold, and the organizations that sold it to you that are giving you a very strong and tight buyback, you're securing the other half of the trade, and you need to be more holistic than just an absolute price tart, although no one wants to overpay, and we get that, and you're already very competitive with your premiums. The additional value comes in that certainty. I can tell you, as someone who's moving around, for the audience watching this, I'm probably going to sell some of your stock back to you and rebuy it in a different locale for different delivery. I want to point out, having been through the cycle, for people that might just be starting, precious metals doesn't travel well. Not because anything happens to it, it's because of government, it's because of what you're allowed in terms of limits on planes, trains, and automobiles, and crossing borders, and everything else. And it's the need. You can't insure it. If you try to do it independently, you can't insure it. Literally, they've captured the market. You go to Brinks, or you go to G4S, I think, it'll cost you an absolute bundle. It's done by weight. To hold that same magic bar that you once bought is a fool's doctrine. What you need is the same kilo of gold or kilo of silver, whatever the item be. You get it back into your dealer. You are newly located. We've got a lot of our community members in Panama. I've got we go visit and we hang out, and we stayed a weekend with one of our community members. And he's relocated from the UK. You know, he can't get it on a boat and get it over there at an affordable price. It's just not nonsensical. So the sell back price, you will. Everybody thinks I'm buying it, I'm not selling it. It's a long term hold. Correct. You're getting in a position of physical gold, but you may have to individually sell bars back if you have any possibility of moving. And everyone who thinks that they don't have a possibility of moving is, you don't know the future that's coming at you, especially if you're in the West right now. If you follow our Reset channel on Odyssey, there's a lot of things going down. You need to be able to play arbitrage on your personal existence where you are treated best. I can tell you this as someone who was in South Africa, who needed to move, who couldn't get employed despite having firsts and an MBA and everything, because, you know, political events, affirmative action, who went to the UK, who was there, who moved from the UK, who's been on a Cyprus, who's now currently in Panama, will be somewhere else tomorrow. You absolutely need to remain nimble, and you need your bullion to remain nimble with you. And the sell back price is a massive part of that. So I'm just doing a triple underline there on what Joshua has just said in terms of value. And I can't endorse that concept enough. And it is global. So there's virtually no exclusions, Josh, within reason. I'm not on the Faroe Islands just yet, or the Marshall Islands, but virtually no exclusions.
We have a whole of market approach. There are some countries that the authorities won't allow us to ship to, like Nigeria, probably South Africa, and probably India, purely because of state taxes and what have you. But other than that,
We're talking gold here, because silver has that VAT problem sometimes. Let's just stick with gold for now. You're referring to gold.
We're talking about gold.
Yeah.
You know, we will do everything we possibly can to ensure that the gold is portable, because gold is liquid anywhere in the world. Gold's a lot easier to send all around the world because there are no tax implications for doing so.
Yeah.
And we're logistical experts, so we can get gold from A to B to C without there being a huge amount of problem. When it's silver, then look, you're moving a lot more metal for a much lower price. So, you know, it's not as easy as gold, but again, you know, Francis, you speak firsthand, you know, we managed to get your silver to you, and that was not straightforward.
I was getting parcels of 35 kilograms, I don't mind saying, for an extended period, and they were all arriving, and they were all exactly in great condition, and they had their bricks in them. They've since been moved on for any interested parties with evil to a safe place which I control. It's absolutely everything came, and that is probably the hardest one because it's high weight, slightly lower value, but the overall package was substantial value. It's not the kind of thing you'd want to have fall behind the couch when you're watching the footy. Josh, this has been really useful. I've enjoyed it. We've taken a lot of your time. I think we need a wind. I would like to give you the opportunity of the parting shot. Our affiliate links are below. What should and why should any final statements, apart from the very powerful comment on buyback pricing, competitive in terms of premiums, pure gold. I think we've made the case for gold. Not having it is going to be a faux pas. And one day, even the best provider will say, can't help you, or you're on a 6-week wait or a 3-month wait, and who knows, arrive. Functional failure, the viewer, not the bullion dealers at all. Any final closing statement that you'd like to make to those watching? Why they should take action, maybe why gold, and anything regarding your personal business and why you think they should go pure gold.
I would say, look, we don't know what we don't know. And we've been surprised over the last three or four years with things that we could have never have predicted. And, you know, gold has always been used as an insurance policy against those sorts of things that you can't predict. Then there are other things that you can predict, like equity corrections, inflation, interest rates. Every single one of those factors, between the things we can predict and the things that we can't predict, support the gold price and the silver price increasing in value quite considerably. And I would say that the benefits in terms of it being private and it being tax efficient and it being instantly liquid, converted into liquid cash, are all reasons why there shouldn't really be an obstacle in the way of you converting, you know, what is seamlessly, you know, cash sitting in bank accounts, equities that are sitting at the top of bull market, into something that is undervalued and something that tends to increase in value. Knowledge is absolute power, and knowledge is key. And I think the more you are aware of the risks within the market, you know, the more the options will present themselves. You know, gold will become a viable option because there aren't really any others that provide the same safety and security. And I would say, you know, getting in touch with us isn't necessarily about buying today or buying tomorrow. It's about telling us your situation. It's about explaining to us what you're trying to achieve. And we will give you that guidance in terms of when to do it, how to do it, and why you should do it.
Absolutely. Sometimes we know how to sell. It's, hey, maybe you let it the price come off a bit. I think you've got the right idea, just not the perfect moment. I love that because in most other people that operate in the space, they want the sale in, it's their margin, they take it. There's not that best interest, although they're not, you know, they're not being mean in any way. It's just commercial interest is very much in their own side. You're interested in the client actually getting the best long-term outcome. In other words, this is not a transactional operation you've been running. It is a relationship-based one, I think, is what you're saying as well. And going back to the gold, I'll reiterate, you're highlighting the insider already moving as to why people should move.
Yeah, and I would look, I'd have to add, you know, it is out of self-interest. You know, we are a commercial entity, and the reason we tell clients to wait sometimes is purely because, you know, the better our clients ultimately do, the better we do in terms of our reputation. And you know, there's a reason why we're featured in most of the press that you see release on a week to month basis. So we play the longer game in terms of building those relationships out of getting things right. And you'd be amazed at how many of our clients recommend their friends and their family because we told them to wait and it turned out that actually they were able to purchase at a discount to where the price is right now.
Yeah, love it. There you have it, guys. Real integrity, long-term approach, relationship-based, very competitive pricing with premiums, the tightest buybacks, readily available and deliverable worldwide. What more can you ask? Joshua Saul, I really appreciate you coming on and having a chat, making your case, A, for gold, and also for people to hit the link below to make their purchases and to have a conversation, importantly, and maybe not make a purchase. Thank you so much for coming on. I've really enjoyed it. And I look forward to hopefully a lot of people realizing why it's imperative to act. No one's going to do this for you. Everything that's sold that requires a salesman to come to your door rarely turns out as good a buy as something you have to take proactive action and make happen, like precious metals in the crazy reset times. Thanks so much for coming on, Josh. We should maybe do it again in a couple of months.
Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Bye-bye.